It was 1973, and a 23-year-old communication arts student was looking forward to graduating that year from the pamantasan ng lungsod ng Maynila. Due to receive the cum laude distinction, she was certain that she would make her parents proud. Unfortunately, the country was under martial law back then, and she would die brutally at the hands of the Philippine Constabulary. You're listening to Stories After Dark, a Philippine true crime and mystery podcast powered by Anchor and released exclusively on Spotify. This is the story of Liliosa Hilao, who became the first known female activist killed during martial law. As tragic as her death was, though, it inspired many other Filipinos to fight back against then-President Ferdinand Marcos's dictatorial regime and restore democracy to the country. Listener discretion is advised due to the graphic and sensitive nature of this story. Liliosa Hilao was born on March 14, 1950, in the municipality of Bulan, Sorsogon. She was the seventh child of a fisherman who later relocated to Manila in the hopes of giving his nine children better lives. For the most part, his plan worked. His children did well in school, so well in fact that they were awarded scholarships upon entering college. Liliosa, or Lily, as she liked to be called, was a consistent honor student ever since she was in grade school, and this continued with her being a star student in college, despite being sickly, often suffering from allergies and asthma attacks. She took up communication arts at the Pamantasan ng Lungsod ng Maynila, a university inside the historic walled city of Intramuros. Besides her near-perfect grades, she held various student government positions and was active in several organizations, including the Communication Arts Club, which she organized, and the campus paper Hasik, where she was appointed editor. She also founded Alethea, the first all-women club at her university, and she took part in the College Editors Guild of the Philippines, an alliance of collegiate student publications in the country. Lily thrived in college, with friends and teachers holding her in high regard, but her studies were disrupted in September 1972 when President Ferdinand Marcos signed Proclamation No. 1081, officially placing the Philippines under martial law. Marcos did so under the guise of protecting the country from communists, but Lily, like her family and many of her classmates, knew that the truth was far more sinister. He wanted to rule the country for life, and the means by which he planned to do this would lead to one of the darkest chapters in Philippine history. Shortly after the declaration of martial law, Lily wrote in her diary that democracy was dead, and she began wearing black clothes as a sign of mourning. She became part of a wave of activism triggered by martial law, with thousands of students dropping out of their universities to become full-time community organizers, like a few of Lily's siblings. Lily herself, however, stayed in school as her asthma prevented her from joining protests. Instead, she used her position as editor of the student paper Hasik, writing a series of thought-provoking essays that carried titles like The Vietnamization of the Philippines and Democracy is Dead in the Philippines Under Martial Law. Lily knew that it was dangerous to publish these essays, especially since her name was attached to the student paper, but she didn't care because she knew no other way to fight back against the Marcos administration. Lily was 23 years old in 1973 when she was set to graduate cum laude, but she never lived to see her graduation day. On April 4 of that year, drunken men barged into the Hilao family home in Quezon City, identifying themselves as part of the Philippine Constabulary's anti-narcotics unit. A Lieutenant Arturo Castillo declared himself as the team leader of the raiding party, whose objective was to look for Lily's older brother, Winfred, who had been tagged as a communist. They were met by Lily's 20-year-old sister Marie, a community organizer who at the time was holding a meeting with her fellow activists. When Marie refused to answer their questions, the soldiers slapped her and demanded that she give them food. She initially obeyed, but later managed to escape to a neighbor's house when the officer assigned to guard her accidentally fell asleep. There, she met her sisters Lily and 16-year-old Josefina. Marie warned the two about the soldiers, but Lily was worried about their mother and decided to go home. Upon her arrival, Lily demanded that the soldiers produce either a search warrant or an arrest order for her brother, but the men only presented a Philippine Constabulary identification card as proof of their claim. Lily's insistence that they present a warrant angered them, and they viciously slapped her and beat her up before placing her under arrest and leading her away in handcuffs. Lily's younger sister Josefina was also arrested, and at midnight, both girls were taken to the Philippine Constabulary's headquarters in Kamkrame, Quezon City. Despite the destination only being 15 minutes away, they reportedly arrived there at around 2 in the morning. Lily and Josefina were placed in separate rooms and forbidden from speaking to each other, but Josefina would later catch glimpses of her sister's bloodied and swollen face, bulging eyes, and battered body, indications that she was being tortured and abused. This was confirmed by their brother-in-law, who was an army officer given permission to visit Lily. On April 7, 3 days after Lily's arrest, her older sister Alice received a phone call informing her that Lily had been taken to the Kamkrame Station Hospital. Alice immediately rushed to the emergency room where she found her sister in critical condition, lying alone in a room that smelled of formaldehyde. Despite all of Lily's injuries, no medical staff had been assigned to treat her. From the hospital, Alice was escorted to the offices of the Anti-Narcotics Unit, where she met her younger sister, Josefina. But their happy reunion was cut short by the arrival of Lieutenant Arturo Castillo, who informed them that their sister Lily had just died. The Anti-Narcotics Unit's official autopsy report declared that Lily had a cardiorespiratory arrest after she committed suicide by drinking muriatic acid. But the nature of Lily's arrest, as well as the obvious signs of torture, led her family to believe differently. Postmortem findings supported this, indicating that Lily's face was severely swollen and disfigured, and her lips bore cigarette burns, which, to quote how her sister Alice would later describe them, was as if Lily's mouth had been used as an ashtray. Her torso was full of bruises, finger marks, and gun barrel marks. Her arms bore puncture wounds that appeared to have come from a syringe, possibly from truth serum injections used during interrogations. It was possible she was also sexually abused, and her family believed she was forced to drink muriatic acid after she was gang raped while imprisoned at Kamkrame. The Philippine Constabulary gave the Hilao family 2,200 pesos, around 100,000 pesos or $2,000 in today's money for burial expenses, but the Hilaos refused to spend it. To make matters worse, truckloads of soldiers were sent to keep vigil during Lily's wake and burial, in the hopes of arresting other so-called subversives. This took away from Lily's family the chance to properly mourn her death, and prevented many of her friends and fellow activists from coming to pay their respects. Lily's classmates at the Pamantasan ng Lungsod ng Maynila managed to pay tribute to her another way though. At their graduation ceremony 2 weeks after her death, they all wore black armbands as a sign of mourning and protest, and they also left a seat vacant to represent Lily. The university also gave her a posthumous cum laude degree and medal during the ceremony. Meanwhile, the Hilao family was placed under close surveillance, forcing several of Lily's siblings to go into hiding. But on October 7, 1974, Marie, Josefina, and Winfred, along with their spouses, were arrested and brought to Camp Olivas in Angeles, Pampanga. They were tortured and interrogated as to the whereabouts of Jose Maria Sison, a fellow activist who had founded the Communist Party of the Philippines. For 9 days, the siblings were left with neither food nor drinking water. They were also subjected to electric shocks and the water cure, although they later realized that their jailers usually stopped torturing them whenever they mentioned Lily's name. Marie even challenged her interrogators to kill all three of them, saying that if one was spared, he or she would speak publicly about the murders just like what they had done after Lily's death. Their relationship with Lily may have saved them from being tortured further, but it wasn't enough to free them. Marie was only released on October 8, 1975, 1 year after they were arrested, and by then she had already given birth to a daughter, whom she named Liza Liliosa in honor of her late sister. Lily's torture and subsequent death were said to have been used by President Marcos to scare his political prisoners into informing on their comrades. Perhaps what he didn't expect, though, was that her family and fellow activists would use her as a symbol of their grievances against martial law. As the first known female and student activist and martial law detainee to be murdered under the Marcos regime, Lily was widely regarded as a martyr who died to save democracy. Her older sister Alice would later write about Lily that she had been, quote, nipped in the bud, but her death sparked like a candle in the night, inspiring all the people working for the restoration of democracy in the country to be more courageous, persevering, and vigilant, be they in the hills or in urban areas. She became the inspiration that brought other names to the fore, and her bravery showed that she was not cowed even in the presence of her military captors in Camp Krame. Before their faces, she blatantly told them, "Democracy is dead in the Philippines." She died wearing a black blouse, demonstrating such thoughts. She died in handcuffs with so many handprints all over her body, end quote. The Philippine Constabulary never took responsibility for Lily's death and even denied allegations that she had been tortured, despite her injuries proving otherwise. Many demanded justice for her murder, but their attempts failed because of martial law. The best that they achieved was the Task Force Detainees of the Philippines, a non-profit organization established in 1974, shortly after Lily's death. Its main goal was to document the countless human rights abuses that occurred during the Marcos regime, to ensure that tortures and murders weren't covered up by the administration. Lily's family did eventually manage to get some form of justice, though they were only able to do so more than a decade after Lily's murder. Shortly after the 1986 People Power Revolution, lawsuits were filed against the newly overthrown Ferdinand Marcos, alleging torture and grievous abuses of human rights during his regime. Among these was one from the Hilo family, under the name of Lily's parents, Maximo and Celsa Hilao, which stated that their daughter had been beaten, raped, and forced to drink muriatic acid while detained by the Philippine Constabulary. Since Marcos had already fled to the United States, the case was tried in an American court. Judge Harry Fong, who presided over it, initially dismissed the Hilo family's claims for lack of merit and referred to a doctrine called Acts of State, which provides immunity to incumbent presidents. Robert Swift, an American lawyer representing the Hilo family and thousands of other martial law victims, then took the case to the Court of Appeal in Southern California, which only opened it in 1990, 4 years after it was filed. To defend himself, Marcos alleged that he knew nothing about the human rights abuses that happened during his administration, but Swift, with help from the Philippine government, provided documents showing that Malacañang Palace regularly received reports of torture sessions and executions of political prisoners. Liliosa Hilao may have been the face of this lawsuit since it was filed by her parents, but the clincher was the murder of Archimedes Trajano, a student who had stood up against Ferdinand Marcos's eldest daughter, Aimee. In 1977, Trajano had attended an open forum at the Pamantasan ng Lungsod ng Maynila, where the 21-year-old Aimee Marcos was the keynote speaker. There, he questioned her position publicly as head of the National Youth Council, saying, quote, "Must the kabataang barangay be headed by the president's daughter? She would not have gotten the position if she weren't the daughter of the president," end quote. His question irritated Aimee, and Trajano would later be seen being seized by the presidential daughter's bodyguards and forcibly taken from the venue. 2 days later, Trajano's mangled body was found on the streets of Manila, having been tortured and thrown out of a second-floor window. Like Aimee, whom he dared to question, Trajano was only 21. After the People Power Revolution, Trajano's mother Agapita sued Aimee Marcos for false imprisonment, kidnapping, wrongful death, and deprivation of rights. In response, Aimee claimed immunity under the Foreign Service Immunities Act, saying that she, at the time, was acting as an official agent of the Philippine government. Thus, she said that she had no control over the action of her security personnel. The court disagreed with her though, saying that Trajano's kidnapping and murder had been outside the scope of her duties as a government agent. It also ruled that Aimee had acted on her own without any official authorization. Because Aimee was found liable for Archimedes Trajano's murder, her father and his administration were in turn also found liable for the death of Liliosa Hilao and the human rights abuses suffered by thousands during the martial law period. The court ruled that while Marcos didn't directly order, conspire, or help law enforcement torture their victims, he was still aware of what they were doing and failed to use his presidential authority to stop them. As a result, the Court of Appeal overturned the earlier dismissal of the cases against Marcos and remanded them for trial to the District of Hawaii, where it was handled by Judge Manuel Rial, who proved to be more sympathetic to the plaintiffs than his predecessor, Harry Fong. During the trial, which began on September 9, 1992, the jury heard from 35 witnesses about themselves and other victims whom Judge Rial classified into three different categories: those who were tortured while being detained, those who had been summarily executed, and those who simply disappeared and were now presumed dead. The trial didn't last long. On September 22, barely 2 weeks after it started, the jury found Ferdinand Marcos guilty of the acts of torture, summary executions, and disappearances that occurred during his regime. 2 years later, on February 23, 1994, the almost 10,000 martial law victims who had filed the case were awarded $1.2 billion as compensatory damages. The following year, they were awarded an additional $776 million, with the Hawaii District Court ruling that each individual plaintiff should receive anywhere between $150,000 and $700,000. But the award meant nothing to the Hilau family, who held that no amount of money could bring back Lily. Their goal was to prosecute Marcos so that he would be convicted of his crimes. Lily's younger sister Marie later said, quote, "It was our incumbent responsibility because we were the ones who survived, and because we were the only ones who survived, we have the responsibility, not just to ourselves, but to our nation as well. We have to go after the perpetrators of human rights violations and let the nation remember the dark days of martial rule," end quote. At 23 years old, Lily was in the prime of her youth, with many incredible opportunities in her future thanks to her excellent academic performance. But she lived in an unfortunate period in Philippine history which placed her in a situation where she had to put pen to paper and express the things that others were too afraid to say. She also stood up to the Philippine Constabulary, whose job was to protect Filipinos, but by whose hands she instead suffered days of torture and eventually death. In her diary, Lily once wrote, quote, "From this day onward, whatever circumstances may jam my way, I'll break through it unscathed, for in the end, who will suffer but me? So much so that I will reach for the unreachable, I'll break that which is unbreakable, and attain what is impossible," end quote. In the end, Lily did achieve this. She inspired thousands of other Filipinos to stand up to the Marcos regime, triggering a revolution that eventually brought back democracy to the country. Her name is etched on the Bandayog ng Mga Bayani's Wall of Remembrance for Martial Law Martyrs and Heroes. She has a street named after her in Bulan, Sorsogon, where she was born. And in 2021, her alma mater, the Pamandasan ng Lungsod ng Maynila, honored her with the opening of the Lilyosa Hilau Gender and Development Corner at the Celso Alcarunungan Memorial Library. Her name and her spirit would live on not just in the annals of history, but also in the heart of every Filipino who believes in true democracy. Thank you for listening to Stories After Dark, a Spotify exclusive powered by Anchor. This story was suggested by Jeka Mescallado on Instagram. The episode was co-written by Kayla De Leon and was narrated and produced by me, Derek. Music is by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. Stay tuned for a new episode, and to make sure you're updated about the show, please follow Stories After Dark on your Spotify app as well as on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you'd like to see the references used for this episode, suggest cases, send personal stories, or further support the show, you can go to storiesafterdark.ph for more information. All of the links are in the episode description.